Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Radio Literature. Well, I'm glad to be back with you. I've been away for 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm raring to go. Let's see, our engineer, as always, you, well, hasn't been here very long, but Daniel MacArthur. And then we have a special guest today, a new addition, I'm not sure which way to phrase it, to Radio Literature, Kit Moore. Kit, how are you?
Doing good, Melvin.
Good to see you. I was worried there for a moment because I logged in and there was nobody there. And then all of a sudden, Daniel's face popped up on the screen. So what's the weather like outside? I haven't been out today. I went out yesterday, had a horrible day, was sick all afternoon and all last night. And I feel a little bit better today. And what's the weather like?
It's pretty nice, actually. Yeah. Very warm. Not too warm, not too hot. Like,
okay.
Pretty reasonable. It's still light out, or at least it was when I got into the station, which is very nice. It's been a while.
Yeah, it just got dark. So let's see. Have the two of you met formally?
Yes, we have met once earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Previous time.
So, I'm sorry about the about that. I forgot to put your address in the address line, Daniel, and I thought because I addressed the email to both of you, but anyway, do we have the two poems ready for from that anthology?
Sure. Yeah, we have. Two poems
okay.
To go.
Okay. So when we play them, Kit can introduce them because I don't know which one she chose, which one Kit chose. So Kit can introduce the poems when we get to them. But first of all, Kit, where are you from? And I remember once meeting a very well-known woman here in Madison, Mary Berry. I didn't know anything about Mary Berry because I lived abroad for a long time, but we're both from Nashville, and she was a distinguished professor. I think she had been provost as well at the University of Pennsylvania. She had had held several government posts, I think under Carter and I don't know whether under Reagan or not, but Carter and at least one other president. And I attended a lecture or something. I don't remember what it was. She was, I don't know, if she, I guess she was the speaker. And afterwards, the woman who was in charge, who organized the whole thing, wanted to get a photograph. And she said, "You get in this picture too." She, every time I saw her, I attended one of her events, she would always put me in the picture. And then it would come out in the Isthmus or the Madison Times or one of those things. So she put me there, and I was standing beside Mary Berry. And so the photographer said, "Can you get a little bit closer?" And I got a little bit closer, and I put my hand lightly on her opposite shoulder from me. And but she didn't want me to touch her, and she made that very clear. I mean, I've been in many photos in my lifetime. That was the only time in my life that anybody reacted that way. I wasn't putting any pressure on her shoulder or anything. Anyway, I moved my hand away, and I thought maybe I shouldn't even get close to her, but the photographer had told us to get closer. So, and I don't remember now why. Oh, because she asked me a question afterwards. She said, I told her I was from Nashville. And she said, "Who are your people?" I didn't know how to answer that question because my people were nobody that she would have known. You know, they weren't anybody illustrious or well known. I mean, I'm sure nobody, she had never heard of my grandmother, you know. And but anyway, I just remember that question, who are your people? Nobody, that's the only time anybody's ever posed me that question to me. So I wonder, I'm not going to ask you, Kit, who are your people, but where are you from?
So I am from New Jersey, Union County. The town that I live in is relatively small. It's New Providence, if anybody knows it. We've got Bell Labs nearby, so some people might know that. For anybody who doesn't, it's sort of nearby Summit and Newark. I'm here in Madison as a student. I am doing degrees in political science and English creative writing at UW-Madison.
How did you decide on those two areas? I mean, was it an easy choice, or did you have to try several areas before you decided on those two?
So I did sort of have to look around. I came in knowing that I wanted to study political science because politics and the way specifically that media informs our understanding of what's going on in the world and helps shape those opinions has always been very interesting to me. But I was actually originally an art major, but I didn't like it. And while I was in college, I got into writing as a hobby, and I decided to change my major to English because of that.
Being a political science major, I wonder if you know that political science was not always called political science.
Oh, really?
There was a great history professor at my college who produced many famous historians, and he had gotten his bachelor's and master's from Harvard. Of course, and when he got his master's from Harvard, that not too many people had PhDs, and there were still people teaching at Harvard who only had master's degrees, who did not have PhDs. And he used to say because a lot of departments were changing their names to political science, and he would say, and he thought that was just ridiculous. He would say, well, I'm sticking with Harvard. You know, they had said it there. Harvard is the guide, and Harvard says the Department of Government. And here we say the Department of Government, and that political science stuff, you know, I don't see the point. So now almost, I don't know if they've changed at Harvard or not. I'll have to look that up. But yeah, it used to be the government. Your people majored in government, not in political science. So do you think you'll go into government or eventually?
Probably not. I'm definitely leaning more into the English and writing side of my degrees. I'm looking into reporting, actually, as people around the station may possibly know. I was a reporter here before taking up the producer role on the show, and I found that very interesting. I found it very engaging to sort of investigate those stories and report on things that were happening as they happened.
Yeah. So, do you have time to write outside your classes?
Yeah, I've been able to find time. Sometimes it ends up cutting into sleep, but yeah, I've been able to find time.
Are you a prose person or a verse person?
Very much a prose person.
Ah, that's that makes me happy because everybody I run into these days, if they're doing a creative writing, they're almost always they call themselves poets. I like to say verse on one side and prose on the other, because I think poetry can be written in verse and in prose. There's a lot of prose that's very poetic, and there's so much verse that I come across that I don't find poetic at all. So I'm glad to know that you don't disdain prose. Let's see. Did you bring two poems that you like?
I did. Are we?
And were you able to get one from the 20th century and then one from, I guess, this century?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Why don't we start with the 20th century and tell us, introduce the poet and the poem, and then read it for us.
All right. So this is The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock by T.S. Eliot. Both of these poems are ones that I encountered in class. This one really stuck with me because of how well it translates the character of the titular J. Alfred Prufrock.
Mm.
Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky, like a patient etherized upon a table. Let us go through certain half-deserted streets, the muttering retreats of restless nights in one-night cheap hotels, of sawdust restaurants with oyster shells, streets that follow like a tedious argument of insidious intent to lead you to an overwhelming question. Oh, do not ask, what is it? Let us go and make our visit. In the room the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. The yellow fog that rubs its back upon the window panes, the yellow smoke that rubs its muzzle on the window panes, licked its tongue into the corners of the evening, lingered upon the pools that stand in drains. Let it fall upon its back, the soot that falls from chimneys, slipped by the terrace, made a sudden leap, and seeing that it was a soft October night, curled once about the house and fell asleep. And indeed there will be time, for the yellow smoke that slides along the street, rubbing its back upon the window panes, there will be time, there will be time, to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. There will be time to murder and create, and time for all the works and days of hands that lift and drop a question on your plate. Time for you and time for me, and time yet for 100 indecisions, and for 100 visions and revisions before the taking of a toast and tea. In the room the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. And indeed there will be time to wonder, do I dare and do I dare? Time to turn back and descend the stair, with a bald spot in the middle of my hair. They will say how his hair is growing thin, my morning coat, my collar mounting firmly to the chin, my necktie rich and modest but asserted by a simple pin. They will say, but how his arms and legs are thin. Do I dare disturb the universe? In a minute there is time for decisions and revisions which a minute will reverse. For I have known them all already, known them all, have known the evenings, mornings, afternoons. I have measured out my life with coffee spoons. I know the voices dying with a dying fall beneath the music from a farther room. So how should I presume? And I've known the eyes already, known them all, the eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase. And when I am formulated, sprawling on a pin, and when I am pinned and wriggling on the wall, then how should I begin to spit out all the butt ends of my days and ways? And how should I presume? And I have known the arms already, known them all, arms that are braceleted and white and bare, but in the lamplight downed with light brown hair. Is it perfume from a dress that makes me so digress? Arms that lie along a table or wrap about a shawl. And should I then presume? And how should I begin? Shall I say I have gone at dusk through narrow streets and watched the smoke that rises from the pipes of lonely men in shirt sleeves leaning out of windows? I should have been a pair of ragged claws scuttling across the floors of silent seas. And in the afternoon the evening sleeps so peacefully, smoothed by long fingers, asleep, tired, or it malingers, stretched on the floor here beside you and me. Should I, after tea and cakes and ices, have the strength to force the moment to its crisis? But though I have wept and fasted, wept and prayed, though I have seen my head grown slightly bald, brought in upon a platter, I am no prophet, and here's no great matter. I have seen the moment of my greatness flicker, and I have seen the Eternal Footman hold my coat and snicker. And in short, I was afraid. And would it have been worth it, after all? After the cups, the marmalade, the tea, among the porcelain, among some talk of you and me, would it have been worthwhile to have bitten off the matter with a smile, to have squeezed the universe into a ball, to roll it towards some overwhelming question, to say, I am Lazarus, come from the dead, come back to tell you all, I shall tell you all. If, once settling a pillow by her head, should say, that is not what I meant at all. That is not it at all. And it would have been worth it, after all. Would it have been worthwhile? After the sunsets in the dooryards and the speckled streets, after the novels, after the teacups, after the skirts that trail along the floor, and this and so much more. Is it impossible to just say what I mean? But as if a magic lantern threw the nerves and patterns on the screen. Would it have been worthwhile if one settling a pillow or throwing off a shawl and turning toward the window should say, that is not it at all. That is not what I meant at all. No, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. Am an attendant lord, one that will do, to swell a progress, start a scene or two, advise the prince, no doubt an easy tool, deferential, glad to be of use, politic, cautious and meticulous, full of high sentence, but a bit obtuse, at times indeed almost ridiculous, at times almost the fool. I grow old, I grow old. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled. Shall I part my hair behind? Do I dare to eat a peach? I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach. I have heard the mermaids singing each to each. I do not think that they will sing to me. I have seen them riding seaward on the waves, combing the white hair of the waves blown back, when the wind blows the water white and black. We have lingered in the chambers of the sea, by sea girls wreathed with seaweed red and brown, till human voices wake us and we drown. Bit of a long one.
That was Kit Moore. And just for those who walked in as you were reading, please repeat the author's name and the title of the poem.
That was The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock by T.S. Eliot.
Thank you. What kinds of things do you most enjoy reading for your own pleasure?
Generally,
themes or genres or whatever.
Well, when I was younger, I used to be very invested in fantasy and sci-fi. I absolutely loved those. But more recently, I have been reading more in the way of nonfiction, a lot more in the realms of political science and history. Mm. Although I also have a great appreciation for comics. I really like comics, and it's my dream to write for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you leave academia and go out into the wide, wide world, what would be, if you could just snap your fingers and do whatever you wished, what would be your ideal occupation?
Oh, man. That's that's kind of a hard one.
I know. You don't have to be precise. Or even accurate.
Yeah. I suppose I'd want to work on my own comic series. Like I said before, that's sort of a dream. Although I can't help but think I might also want to do reporting too. Like if I could somehow do them both without absolutely destroying my schedule.
Yeah. Are you reading anything of interest now that you'd like to mention? Maybe somebody would go to the library and get it or go out and buy it?
I recently read The Watergate Girl. That's a sort of like autobiography kind of memoir of the Watergate investigation by, I believe, Jill Winebanks, who was one of the lawyers who worked on the case. That was very interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just recently finished a very interesting book called The Last Negroes at Harvard. Mm. And I recommend it for anybody who is interested in, it's history, but it's also personal accounts of the author and his roommates at Harvard that entered their freshman year. And You could, even if you don't want to read it, you might look it up and find out what the title means. And then you might pick it up, read chapter one, chapter two, and then I don't think you could put it down after that. The Last Negroes at Harvard by Kent Garrett. And I'm listening on tape to a book by Bernie Taupin. Do you know who Bernie Taupin is?
No.
Either of you?
No, not familiar with that name.
I'm surprised that that Daniel doesn't know it. Bernie Taupin is Elton John's songwriter. He wrote most of the hits that Elton John recorded. He wrote the words. Elton John did the music. And so Bernie Taupin. Yeah, it's a delightful book. It's very long. I'm listening to it. I think they're about 14 discs, something like that. And I'm really enjoying it. What about you, Daniel? Anything you've read recently that you enjoyed especially?
Yeah, I've read a few good books recently and a few books that I couldn't even quite finish.
Can you tell us about one or two?
So most recently, a book that I enjoyed was A Wild Sheep Chase by Haruki Murakami, who I don't know if you're familiar, but he's a Japanese author that does, he writes a lot of magical realism, which is a genre that I quite enjoy. That book is about a man who turns 30, and soon after turning 30, he kind of is almost put on a kind of quest where he has to drop everything that he's doing to go literally find a sheep, which is why it's called A Wild Sheep Chase, but it's
it's, I see,
a little surreal and strange. But it,
it
was good.
Kit, can we listen to one of the poems that you found on the in the anthology that we have there in the CD library?
All right. So this first one is The Lost Pilot by James Tate.
Lost Pilot from my father, 1922 to 1944. Your face did not rot like the others. The co-pilot, for example, I saw him yesterday. His face is corn mush. His wife and daughter, the poor ignorant people, stare as if he will compose soon. He was more wronged than Job. But your face did not rot like the others. It grew dark and hard like ebony. The features progressed in their distinction. If I could cajole you to come back for an evening, down from your compulsive orbiting, I would touch you, read your face as Dallas, your hoodlum gunner, now with the blistered eyes, reads his Braille editions. I would touch your face as a disinterested scholar touches an original page. However frightening, I would discover you, and I would not turn you in. I would not make you face your wife, or Dallas, or the co-pilot, Jim. You could return to your crazy orbiting, and I would not try to fully understand what it means to you. All I know is this. When I see you, as I have seen you at least once every year of my life, spin across the wilds of the sky like a tiny African god, I feel dead. I feel as if I were the residue of a stranger's life, that I should pursue you. My head cocked toward the sky, I cannot get off the ground, and you, passing over again, fast, perfect, and unwilling to tell me that you are doing well, or that it was mistake that placed you in that world and me in this, or that misfortune placed these worlds in us.
So that was James Tate reading his poem. What was the title again?
Pilot.
Pilot, okay.
The Lost Pilot.
The Lost Pilot. Okay. What is the other poem from the anthology?
So the other one is Facing It by Yusuf Komunyakaa.
Okay.
The black granite. I said I wouldn't, damn it. No tears. I'm stone. I'm flesh. My clouded reflection eyes me like a bird of prey. The profile of night slanted against morning. I turn this way. The stone lets me go. I turn that way. I'm inside the Vietnam Veterans Memorial again, depending on the light, to make a difference. I go down to 58,022 names, half expecting to find my own in letters like smoke. I touch the name Andrew Johnson. I see the booby trap's white flash, name shimmer, and a woman's blouse, but when she walks away, the name stay on the wall. Breaststrokes flash, a redbird's wings cutting across my stare, the sky, a plane in the sky, a white vet's image floats closer to me, then his eyes look through mine. I'm a wonder. He's lost his right arm inside the stone and the black mirror. A woman's trying to erase names. No, she's brushing a boy's hair.
As usual, our time goes by so quickly. I think somebody speeds up the clock when radio literature comes on. But anyway, and you'll be hearing more from both from Kit Moore and from Daniel MacArthur. And I don't know if we have time to get in one more poem or not. Do you have a very short one or is it fairly long? Because we have about 1 minute.
I've got a short poem.
Oh, okay, good.
This is good. A 19th century by Walt Whitman, When I Heard the Learned Astronomer.
Oh, I love this poem.
I'll do my best. When I heard the learned astronomer, when the proofs, the figures were ranged in columns before me, when I was shown the charts and diagrams to add, divide, and measure them, when I, sitting, heard the astronomer where he lectured with much applause in the lecture room, how soon, unaccountable, I became tired and sick, till rising and gliding out, I wandered off by myself, in the mystical moist night air, and from time to time, looked up in perfect silence at the stars.
Hmm. Did you come across that in a class or in your random reading?
That was from a class, and I read it towards the end of the school year when I first read it, so it really stuck with me.
Oh, good.
As you can imagine.
Yeah, I love Walt Whitman. Kit, have you read much Walt Whitman?
I think a while back, but not recently.
Yeah, yeah. Has either of you read Howl by Allen Ginsberg?
I've heard it once, but I have not read it.
I recommend that poem because I remember when I was, I don't know if I was a child or an adolescent, teenager. I'm not sure what years this were. It might have been the 1950s. But I heard a lot and read a lot about Allen Ginsberg and this poem that was so famous, Howl, that had been banned, and he went to jail because it was considered profane or something. You know, it was profanity. And when I finally read the poem, I thought, "Oh, this is wonderful!" So, Howl by Allen Ginsberg. And with that, I think we're going to have to say goodbye to our listeners. Because radio literature just goes by so fast. So thank you, Kit Moore, for being with us tonight. I'm sure the listeners will want to hear more from you and also from Daniel for doing double duty, reading poetry and keeping us on the air.
Sure thing.
With his engineering. So good night, everybody, and we hope to see you again next week at the same time on Radio Literature.
Been listening to Radio Literature, a weekly program on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. We are listener-sponsored community radio. Join us again next Thursday at 7:30 for more features of local, national, and international interest.
Soon, it's going to take me to the moon. together we'll fly away. We're going to float right through the day. We're going to drift right through the night. Together we'll be out of sight. Me and together we'll be out of sight. We're going to drift right through the night. We're going to float right through the day.